and six books. Nine prison coins for the DS-106 good spell. Gabe, so we'll start again. It's the DS-106 good spell. Fitting splendidly since 2013 on DS-106 Radio for Life. This is one of 106 bullets. Mantras and Koans, if you like, that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, about openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me, as usual, is Mariana Finnis. Good evening, Mariana.
Good evening, John. Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Yes, yourself?
I am okay, and I'm hoping that we are live on the radio now. We'll wait and see if anybody's listening, and they can let us know that we're coming out, whether the sound is coming out okay and all that. But really lovely to hear your voice. We missed you. We had a party last week, and you missed it.
I saw the tweets, rather. I was out in the fresh air at the time. And it sounded like I thought, oh, there's my job gone. You're having too much fun.
I was sad because I think it was you who said you wouldn't be there, and then Alan and we had both, you know, David and I, we both thought about recording and we forgot. And so but it was nearly to the end when I went, oh no, and I forgot to put my call recorder on and he forgot as well. So we missed you because it was a big party.
Yeah. I've just got Nicecast records everything that goes out and puts it in a folder, so
You were very professional about it. we were just futzing for an hour.
Yeah. Okay. So Jim McLean, who's in Scotland, in Aberdeenshire, I think. Hi, Jim, is listening in. I hope you find this interesting. So maybe just to revise, this is the sort of DS-106 good spell, and it started out, Mariana, with a blog post that you made with 106 bullet points in it about DS-106. And I've no idea, I think we're about episode 20 odd. Like, so it would be actually even 30 odd now.
Is it 30 but, odd? I think 30 yeah. odd now, probably.
And the bullet today is,
I was going to send a tweet saying that we were going to talk about camels.
Yeah, we're going to talk about camels. So
go on, read it.
If you're going to play in this playground, you better listen to Rumi and find your camel. Following other people's camels is all too easy, and it's exhausting. So, I'm guessing quite a lot of people will be reasonably baffled by that. I knew as much that Rumi is a Sufi poet, among other things. But a quick Google of Rumi and camel brought up too many links to check out. So, he seems to have had a lot to do with camels. And at this point, I'm kind of wondering, what on earth has this got to do with DS-106? and hopefully you're going to explain that.
Well, we're going to listen to the actual poem in a little while, so then people will be a bit clearer about what the bullet means. But I think fundamentally, I was going for this poem is one of my favorites. It's something that I love Rumi and I enjoy reading him, and the idea of the lost camel is really it's not really about the camel. It's about how when we are seeking for things that matter to us, and we're looking for, I guess in the context of DS-106, when we're looking for the things that will interest us in terms of the art that we're making, the digital stories that we are telling, that there is so much out there that you could potentially run around doing and trying to make things simply to please other people, and not because it's something that drives you or you're passionate about. And that a lot of what makes some of this open learning work or not is the extent to which you're able to find your voice. And that's what the poem speaks to, the idea of finding your own camel rather than going around looking for other people's camels.
Okay. So I think I've probably chased a number of donkeys. I'm not sure if it counts during DS-106. It's certainly taking it some strange directions.
I think it may be something, a contextual kind of thing. You know, yeah. where Rumi was, and you know, there were lots of camels, more so than maybe you know around here.
Okay, so we'll play this, and I'll attempt to make Nice Cast play this poem here. We'll have a listen, and it's about 4.5 minutes long. So we'll see you on the other side, folks.
You've lost your camel, my friend, and everyone's giving you advice. You don't know where your camel is, but you do know these casual directions are wrong. Even someone who hasn't lost a camel, who's never even owned a camel, gets in on the excitement.
Yes, I've lost my camel too. A big reward for whoever finds it.
He says this in order to be part owner of your camel when you find it. If you say to anyone's suggestion, I don't think so, the imitator says the same thing immediately.
I don't think so either.
When good information comes, you know it right away. But not the imitator. That bit of information is medicine to you. It gives color to your face and strength to your body. Your eyes brighten, your feet get lively and agile. You say, thank you, my friend. This truth you give feels like freedom to me. Please, go in front. Be the leader. You have the scent of my camel better than I do. But the imitator doesn't feel the intensity of these clues. He hears your wild outcries, though, and gets some inkling of what it might be like to be close to finding a lost camel. He has indeed lost a camel, but he doesn't know it yet. Wanting and imitating someone else's wanting has blinded him. But he follows along in the searching, calling out what the others call out. Suddenly, he sees his own camel browsing there. The one he didn't know he'd lost. Only then does he become a seeker. He turns aside and goes by himself towards his camel. The sincere one asks, "Why have you left my search?"
Up until now, I was a fake. I was flattering you because I wanted to be part of your glory. Now that I've separated myself from you, I am more truly connected to you. I know what you are doing. Before, I was stealing camel descriptions from you. When my spirit saw its own camel, that seeing filled everything. Now, all my insincerity and copycat words have changed to virtues. They brought me here. I was sowing my own seed, though I thought I was working for nothing. Like a thief, I crept and entered a house, and it was my own home.
Be fiery, cold ones. So heat can come. Endure rough surfaces that smooth you. The subject of all this is not really two camels. There's only one lost camel. But language has difficulty saying that. Muhammad said, "Whoever knows God stammers." Speaking is like an astrolabe pointed at the sky. How much really can such a device know? Especially of that other sky, to which this is a piece of straw. That other sun, in which this is a fleck of dust.
So, I'm wondering, Mariana, that some of this is perhaps a wee bit more serious than our normal topics. If we just cut out perhaps the religious, would that be reasonable? And think about how this, you know, these camels are what you learn, or take it from that point of view. Is that worth?
Yeah. Well, the first thing to say, I think, is that when Rumi talks about God, he means it in the kind of widest possible sense, because it's not God in the sense of, you know, my upbringing as a Catholic or an external entity or anything like that. So that's the first thing. I suppose we should say something about who is reciting the poem, because it's somebody called Ashley Ramsden, who runs the Institute of Digital Story, of actual just storytelling, not digital storytelling. I'm so used to putting the two things together, of storytelling at the School of Storytelling at Emerson College, and he does a lot of Rumi readings, and and I guess that for me, the essence of that bullet was really, I just love the idea of the image of, you know, people chasing around, you know, in this case it's a camel, but chase around anything that you're just simply chasing because you want the approval of the person who is passionate about this thing they've lost or this thing they're seeking. But actually you've never stopped to think about, is it something that I even want to find? And that's, I suppose, the serious part, right? Because there is something about what motivates us to learn, what motivates us to spend time creating, you know, in our case, it might be, you know, a little animated GIF that might take us a long time for no reason at all, but there is something that drives us to do it. And I guess the point of this this bullet was to say that you kind of need to stop and reflect on what that something is for you personally, rather than, or maybe as well as initially, just chase other people's camels because it's what they want to do. Because you, the sort of element of it around, you know, it being very exhausting and very tiring. I think you know that once you get involved in what is the community of, let's talk about VS106 specifically, and what is the kind of when you're actually doing something like the Headless 13 that we did and so on, you get pulled into, you like all these people and you want to do lots of really nice things and you want the approval from them. And so I think it is very likely that initially with all of that, what happens is that you look at all, what other people are doing and you go, oh, he likes that, she likes that, and, you know, I want them to like me, I'll do some of that.
Yeah, I'm always chasing other people's camels.
I think there is some value in that because you get to find out, actually, this ain't my camel.
Yeah. Or you find an angle to the, and this is where the metaphor just gets horrible. You find an aspect of the camel that is yours, say, you know, that there's something that you start off doing something and then become interested in a particular aspect, which might be an aspect that nobody else is that interested in.
Well, if you listen, I can almost recite that poem by heart, so that, you know, I'm coming from a place where I know it very well. But if you listen to it, part of what what the story is saying is that here is somebody who was lost themselves, and they kind of attached themselves to this person who was desperate to find the camel they'd lost. But in doing that, it brought alive something in them. And they realized that it wasn't their camel that they were looking for, but actually, you know, I gathered some information, which I think is what you're saying. I gathered some information about actually what makes up my camel. So I'm going to go and look for that now.
Yeah.
And spend, you know, 10 hours learning how to, you know, do a cinemagraph that will allow me to, you know, keep a whole image still, but only the eyes are moving. Because, well, there's something in that that pulls me that I feel passionate about, and 10,000 other people would not.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think basically that's just, I mean, part of a teacher's job is to hopefully get their students or pupils or whatever interested and excited, and then to not maybe hold on to them completely so that they can develop their own understanding and things. And obviously that's greatly constrained if you're learning inside a school or a college or something like that. But I think as a teacher what you want to do is get folk interested, and then them to be interested in, you know, from their own for their own sakes, rather than just for what you're trying to teach them.
I think that's a really nice analogy, and in the S106 we do a lot of that, because if you don't do the kind of hand holding and the kind of come on my quest with me and I'll take you along for as long as you want to come, and then you'll find what your own quest is. That's really what it's saying, and I guess that's partly what, you know, one would could say, and I think that's what you're saying, that partly what our role as teachers is to teach our students how to inquire, how to be curious, how to be passionate, how to find their voice. And part of that is going to be you've got to teach them how to listen to themselves as well as others, I suppose.
I guess one of the nice things about doing something like the DS106 is that it's given us a great deal of freedom that we wouldn't have if we were working for, the government or a school or a college or, you know, a university, because it's this sort of open thing, you've really got a chance to play with these ideas a bit, in a much less realistic but much purer way than you would in a normal education institutional sort of surroundings.
And it is this thing of being able to try out just about anything that other people, certainly in my case, you know, that when I came to the S106, I had no idea some of these things even existed, let alone had tried them myself. But it gives us the freedom to do those things and to have a try and to go, well, you know, maybe I'm crap at this, but, you know, look, I found that I can actually, you know, do that quite well, and I quite enjoy it, so I'll do more of that and less of that. And you know, that sort of experimenting, it reminds me of, Laura, I don't know if you've come across Laura Ritchie. She's been doing quite a lot around open learning. She's a cello player and she teaches music. And I've just met her this week, just gone. She brought her cello with her to come and see me. And we were talking about music and talking about how, you know, that is just not something that I have ever done, played an instrument. And that by now I was kind of, you know, making the assumption that that was something that I would never do. So she was determined to bring her cello in and to get me to play it. And so we were talking about this, and she tells the story of how, I asked her how was it that she picked the cello? Because your everyday, it's not a guitar, is it, or a piano?
Yeah.
And so I wondered, so I asked her, and she says that, they took her, you know, to school, because she started when she was very young, and they took her into the music room, and they laid out all of these different instruments that they had available, and let her try each one for her to choose what she wanted to play. To me, that just seemed, what a wonderful, what a joyous thing. Mm. And it turned out that, you know, although parents weren't so impressed with the fact that you know, she picked the cello because it was so big and all of these things, the practical things of why, you know, you probably wouldn't want to play the cello, apparently that, you know, that the music teacher kind of just insisted because she just showed a real affinity for this thing that she'd never picked up before. So, you know, I suppose that's another example, isn't it, of how I discovered my love for animated GIFs, which, you know, is something that I would never in my life have thought would be something that I'd spent my time doing, my spare time doing, for no reason at all, other than that I love it. So, and I think DS-106 does, you know, offer that kind of opportunity. You know, I guess there are so many camels that people pursue.
It's like a wee camel stampede of different camels splitting off from each other.
We got a choice of camels to identify with.
Just a quick aside to David, I work for the government. To David, I wasn't meaning it was a bad thing. I was just thinking that you're somewhat constrained by any employer, as opposed to when you're just doing stuff for fun. And I guess there's tons of stuff that tie into that. The ability to choose something to learn by yourself is a pretty privileged position to be in, I guess. If you have time to hook on to somebody else's camels.
Well, I don't think it is just, you know, the government. I guess it's kind of any institution, any organization that you are part of inevitably will have a structure, will have rules.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, if we're talking education, and you're talking, in my case, it would be higher ed, you know, people are going for a qualification.
Yeah.
I think that that's something that DS-106 does really loves, you know, beautifully, that when you watch the people from the University of Mary Washington and you watch how they find the joy in learning as well as going for their accreditation, as well as going for their bit of paper, whatever it might be, that is the ideal. But I do think that it adds a level of complexity when you've got the organizational setting, whatever that might be, to allow for, which in our case, as open participants to DS-106, we don't have in the context of DS-106. And I think it does allow us to put in the pot that sense of passion and learning for its own sake, which hopefully then other students can benefit and learn from too. I do think there is that kind of sense of, you know, role modeling that kind of passion for learning. That thing that Mike Welsh calls soul making. I think, you know, soul learning. That's what, you know, he hopes for in his students. And I think that as open participants in DS-106, you know, that is one thing that we can and do bring for the students who are doing it for, you know, in the context of a higher ed qualification. So
it's probably interesting for people who are doing that to see another side to their studies as well, because they will be very focused, I guess, on passing exams and things. I've noticed in a couple of things today about this, one in the Observer magazine of all places, about Tilda Swinton, the actress, who has, and I'm probably getting this quite wrong because I probably didn't read it with enough memorization or whatever, but she started a school. I think her kids went to a Steiner school, and after they finished, there wasn't, post 14, there wasn't an opportunity for them to go on, so she seems to be involved in some sort of school at the moment where the learning is very pupil directed, it's very loose and doesn't have any exams or anything at the end, for when this is for children who would normally in Scotland be aiming towards exams. But what was quite interesting is they just had a good Ofsted inspection.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't there wasn't details, and I guess it'd be interesting because these things are usually published to have a wee look at it once it is published. But the first thing I think to notice was it's quite an expensive business to have your child in this thing at the moment. I think they're looking into scholarships and things, but it very much was a fee paying situation that you get your kids into. So I just thought it was interesting, and also somebody pointed me to a school in, I guess, Silicon Valley, which has been run by some ex-Google high up.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be a mix between Montessori and tech. So they're very high tech, but they're very pupil centred.
Mm-hmm.
And project based learning and stuff like this, but again it's reasonably expensive, and there were those small class sizes, and I think two teachers per class and things like this. So I
guess that what you're raising there is the kind of the privilege, I suppose, that the kind of learning that we would value, we would treasure, in terms of, you know, for ourselves as well as in terms of, you know, as educators, certainly in the context, in our context, is comes with a price tag.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a fair thing. Having said that, of course, once you put it in the context of learning on the open web, then I suppose the only privilege there is access to the web. But
yeah,
there is no cost to it otherwise.
I think the access is twofold, though. It's not only just straightforward. Have you got the equipment and the bandwidth or whatever internet connection? And there's still areas of Glasgow where they've only got 60% penetration per internet connection. But there's also sort of, have you the ability to learn in that sort of situation culturally? Have you accrued enough language? Have you accrued enough other bits and pieces that enable you to learn? And I mean, I think, and this is personal, I think is that the in the moment in Scottish education we're very much focused on narrowing the attainment gap. The attainment between the lowest attainers and the highest attainers, and it's actually been widening over the last while. And I would guess that it's got an awful lot more to do with poverty than it has to do with what goes on in school. Mm. People living in poverty, when they arrive in school, are maybe not best equipped to take the advantages or the affordances of the classroom. Because there's been too many other things going on in their wee lives, and I guess that's one of the problems with open education. And I think that Stephen Downes quite often addresses this, is that just providing resources, providing Wikipedia information online, it only goes so far, and it's not just the ability to access it sort of technically that you need, it's the ability culturally to access this information. And
I think you raise something that's very, which is not just the tool, it's also that actually if it isn't value in the context that you're in, then where would you even learn the even if you have access, where would you even learn how the how? Because actually, there is no time that would be allowed for it, and who knows? If you're thinking, it's the kind of privilege that we have, being able to use Twitter as our classroom and all of that, because we have a whole lot of things that come together to enable us to do that. But I suppose what you're saying is there are many. That we take that as if it were the norm, and that actually there are many, many cultural contexts where it isn't the norm. And if you factor in the economic situation, the kind of, you know, just simply, I don't, you know, if I don't have enough to eat or to feed my children, then they're not going to be in the right state to be able to take advantage of anything that I might create in the context of, you know, an open online experience of any kind.
Yeah, dead on.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's, goodness me, we've been very serious today.
Yeah, actually, it's surprising. I thought when we started with the camels, you know, that we would...
I thought it would be fun with the lost camels.
No, I mean, it's a good story, and I suppose that's...
What you raise is this thing of it's all very well, you know, to have our kind of ideals about education, but then when you widen your thinking to actually the reality of so many people, it isn't as simple as you say, make it available to everybody, because it's not everybody.
Yeah, there needs to be different parts. Giffa Dog is telling us to be less serious.
He disagrees. He thinks we should lighten up and play some music.
Yeah. Well, we're probably getting to that time. Just a couple of interesting things, DS106 wise. I guess one was Jim Groom leaving the University of Mary Washington, which was certainly news to me completely.
You're about two weeks old now. If it was only news to you this week,
yeah. Well, I didn't have a great internet connection over the
you
last.
You said,
last
I know,
week,
I know.
Week or so, but that it'd be interesting. Again, this follows off over from a post I've referred to before, by Alan, about how DS106 has actually survived changes in personality and focus and all sorts of things. Very well indeed. That it's not as Jim Groom centric as you would believe.
No, and we had the advert. David is just posted it for you. You could be the next Jim Groom.
Yeah,
they posted the advert, and. It's funny, David was read the advert and I did too, and I laughed because they put, I guess they have to put in a lot of those adverts in the US, probably more so than with us. They have to put all the details for accessibility, and so it talks about, you know, how much weight you have to lift, you know, stairs that you might have to climb, that kind of thing, and David, that's what the some climbing means. When you read it, it will make sense to you.
That's
a long list of the physical activities that you need to be able to do if you are going to take the post. And it was rather funny when you put that together in the context of, you know, what Jim does and how we mock Jim Groom on this one of things. It lent itself for a number of animated GIFs having Jim dancing in all sorts of places.
Yeah, I'm seeing it. It's sitting frequently.
Yeah.
Climbing occasionally, reaching occasionally, repetitive motion frequently.
It must be a kind of accessibility law that you have to outline exactly, and that's its intention. But of course, for us, in the context of mocking Jim with DS106, it was quite funny.
Perfect. Yeah.
So anyway, you said a couple of things. One was Jim leaving and how it wasn't, DS106 wasn't Jim dependent. We hope not.
Yeah.
And then.
So the other one, I really don't know the whole connection between the sort of New York GIF artists and DS106, but there seems to be some cross fertilization with GIF Fight and now this NYC Transport thing, which it looks like quite a lot of fun, and I think quite relevant to the camels, because. This is a camel that Michael Branson Smith and name's gone.
Ryan Seslow.
Because he plays with his name so much. I think I've got him as Ryan Slow in my head. But they're doing some exhibition with the New York City Transport, and they've invited people to animate GIFs of old pictures. And I've had a wee shot, and this obviously is a camel that belongs to somebody else, because I have no connection with New York City or anything else.
For the New York City Transit, no, we really haven't got any.
No, so that is
certainly not our camel.
Camel, but you know, you jump in and chase that particular camel, and you begin to see interesting things. I think, and it might not be earth shattering; it might just be another wee Photoshop tip.
What I understand of it is that it is a kind of curation that they're doing, you know, asking for people to submit animated GIFs, and then they're going to do a kind of physical exhibition as well as a digital one of the best ones. I think that's what I understand of it. What I found interesting about it was that it I've had a little go with a couple, is this notion that, of course, you've got this, some are very old images, and they're very still, and so the idea of then, you know, creating animation in the context of that, and the whole name of the exhibition thing is animating transit, isn't it? So the whole idea of that, it's an interesting, I don't think it's any more than that. I think it's simply a an exhibition, both digital and physical. I think they did one like it last year as well, where they created the animated GIF a physical exhibition with screens and various things. That's what I think they did.
Yeah, well, it gives us an opportunity to play with one of our favourite subjects, I guess.
Oh no, Sheila's giving us an idea now. She says it's time for a camel GIF. Because we're using the camel as a metaphor for the S106, which it's time for a camel GIF. I'm going to have to think about that now.
Find a camel, right? I think maybe we've stretched our camel.
We should probably say to, in case, because I know that there are some people that listen to the podcast that, who may not be the S106 people but who want to learn about it, we should say that there are a number of summer runs of the S106 happening at the moment, and that it would be a good thing to go to the main site if they are interested in getting involved, because there's at least three that I know of that they, you know, it's just summer courses that they could get involved in if they wanted to do something with a group rather than self-paced.
But I think the only one I've really touched on is the Prisoner 106 one, which is mysteriously lacking any instructions. So it gives you plenty of opportunity to follow your own camel.
You see, it's a good image, I tell you. Yeah. It's a good image, the old camel.
whoever set up Prisoner 106 doesn't seem to be leading.
I was going to say, they don't have a high need for control and structure, do they?
Yeah.
But no, I think that the idea was that, because I saw a post by Paul Bond, and he suggested that one of the things that we could do would be to do the same as in the TV series, where they each week they had a new number two.
Mm-hmm.
That we could do the same, so that each one of us who actually had resigned at the site would take a week and would run a week.
That's what that was about.
That's what I understood him to me. It seemed like a great idea.
Yeah, no, that's so it's like everybody takes a turn of teaching.
Exactly, so yeah. We run it like that. And of course, seeing as David is listening, and we decided last week that the S106 was lacking a music week, I think that David needs to run a Prisoner 106 music week, because that series would be nothing without its music. That's my ending.
Right, okay.
And I mean it now.
we'll lay down that challenge, and then we'll hang up, because that'll mean we can't. Yeah, that's laid out. Okay, so I should just, I suppose, look for a bumper.
A lovely bumper to play. And did you not? You didn't get the the new story that that Rocky Lou published on SoundCloud, and I haven't got the link immediately, but yeah. It's beautiful. We should play it next week.
Okay, I'll dig that out and fire it up. But I'm gonna just play out with my wee favourite. Oops, that's the lost camel again. Here we go.
Good spell, we're John and Mary on a good spell. It's off and on and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
And I just like that because it was made specially for us, but also because I have such fond memories of Top Cat. So, we'll just hang up. Good night, folks. Mm-hmm.